Chapter 21, Gospel of John, and verse 1 I'll start at. After Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, it happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them, and they said, "We'll go with you." So they went out and got into the boat. But that night they caught nothing. Early disillusion, by the way. If you've ever been a fisherman, that's always frustrating. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not recognize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, have you any fish? Or haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say that, "It's the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals. There were some fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many fish, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to his disciples. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." John and Carol Andrews are on a short-term mission. And they are working with a group called Farm Aid. And Farm Aid is an opportunity to go to different farms around the nation. And they invite people who are willing to go there and help with the farm family with whatever the needs are. And the needs, of course, in some cases this time of year is planting. They're in North Dakota, and they think they moved to a new place, a second farm already. And so I'm going to ask Sarah to just share a little bit of the things that they emailed us. They asked for prayer, and I wanted it to be part of what we talk about today because it's going to be a little bit of what I want to use in the sermon too. Hold it on until it goes on. No, it's on.
That's okay. Okay, I'll just start. Hi, all. Well, it has been a very eventful week and a half already. We spent 7 days in Scranton in a farmhouse they use as a hunting cabin built in the early 1900s. It had everything we needed, 7 people, 1 bathroom. Now we are working on a place in Center, North Dakota, and stay 35 minutes away in a quaint motel. At least we each have our own bathroom. The ground at this farm has hidden wet spots that even the farmer did not know about. We found one, muck up to 18 inches deep, then ice. The guys were skating on it, weird but true. The planter was buried the deepest. Wait till you see the pictures. Well, they are out now and planting again, finishing about 200 acres before we move to the next place. If I can get John to leave, we should be home by the 4th. Praying all is well with you as we covet your prayers of safety and good health for us. We love you all. See you soon. Carol and John.
I'd like to invite the children to come down, if you would, please. I have a treat today. It's called fruit by the mouth or something. Yeah, foot or mouth. And it's about this. That's longer than I thought. I guess I should really cut it in half for you guys. Maybe have you each share one with somebody else. That would be, I don't know. It's about this long. Pretty good. That's almost 3 feet of it. We're going to be studying something today, and it's about Simon Peter. Remember Simon Peter? He's the guy that denied Jesus. You may or may not remember that. They said, do you know Jesus? Are you following Jesus? He said, no, I don't know who he is. He got scared. And then this happens where Simon Peter gets told by Jesus how much he loves him. And then he sends him on a job. Now, this is the hard part. It's bad enough to do something like deny Christ. That was bad. And it was pretty easy to have Jesus say, I forgive you, Peter. That felt pretty good. But the next step is always the hardest. Because you only get so much stuff and you only get so much time. So here's your assignment. Okay? Today, you have to try and give your fruit by the foot away to at least one other or two other people. Watch how you do it. You go like this. Oh, you like that. Your eyes got big. There you go. You don't. Oh, good. I'll keep more for me. And I'm going to actually give it away to 3 people today. There. Now, here's what's exciting. Here's the hard part. When you actually let go of the thing that you wanted, then you learn that it wasn't all that important. And here's what Jesus is going to try and teach Peter. You know what Peter was scared of? He was scared he was going to lose his life. He was scared, and it was okay to be scared. But here's what happened. Once Peter understood how to give it away, he was no longer scared anymore. Once Peter gave himself away, once he understood that, then he understood what Jesus had said to him, which was, feed my sheep. So in the sermon, all right, I want you to take your fruit by the foot, at least tear off a couple pieces, share them with mom and dad, or somebody sitting around you, okay? All right? and I want you to let go of something that belongs to you and give it away to somebody else. Can you do that for me? And then I want you to listen where Jesus says to Peter, feed my sheep and feed my lambs. Yes, he said that once. And he said, feed my sheep twice. And that's when I want you to remember that you are sharing what you are eating with somebody. Can you remember that today? Good. Come get one. Here you go. There you go, honey. There you go. You're welcome. Everyone get one? Good. When you have a guideline that we picked up from Oxano, which was that focus of turning disillusioned into passionate builders, it has a tendency to impact and make you think about a text that you're using and looking at. And one of the things that happened here in this particular section is I was fascinated by the amount of disillusionment. The disciples were fishing. They were looking for a break. This was a high-stress time. Jesus had been dead. The resurrection, the tomb is empty. They're not sure what to do with all these emotions. And they wanted to go relax. And for them, going and relaxing was, let's go fishing. Peter came up with the idea. Everyone else kind of stepped up into it. And they began to move forward and go fishing. And part of the fun of fishing is a little bit of the distraction of fish. You actually get a few. And they get nothing. And so the setup for this particular moment comes to be. Disillusioned, not trying to be sure of what they're not aware and sure of what's happening next. They have this little moment. And Jesus, recognizing them, meets them on the beach and hollers out to them. They're not too far out. And he said, it's kind of interesting. I thought the translation, do any of you have your word translated children instead of friends? It's paideion. It means children. Okay? An accurate translation is children. All right? Haven't you got any fish? And they answered, you have to understand, fishermen, no, I got nothing. You got skunk then, huh? You ever have those kind of conversations if you're a fisherman? They're not pleasant. No, they answered. He responds, throw your net on the right side of the boat. Throw your net on the right side of the boat. One of the things that you're going to find about Jesus is he'll say something and he requires you to do something. There is this step of doing that the church stumbles on sometimes. It's that step of acting. It's like God gets us to this point and now you have to step into it. Now you have to act upon it. Now it will affect how you function. It will change your priorities in life. It will move you. And here it is, they're listening, he says, throw your net on the other side of the boat, on the right side of the boat. And says, as they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And instantly, John, the guy who wrote the gospel, he knows this is the Lord. It triggers the remembrance of the last fishing experience when this happened. He says, Peter, that's the Lord. Peter now, not actually recognizing the Lord, responds quickly, throws his coat over him or his cloak around him so he can go to shore. He jumps in the water about 100 yards from shore and either walks or swims. We're not sure how he gets to shore, but he gets there. And then Peter realizes that the fish are on. There are already fish being cooked on the fire. And Jesus has bread and fish available for them. And he says, to them, bring the fish and come ashore. Peter runs back out to the boat again, jumps back, helps him haul the fish out on shore, and you've got this situation now. And Here Jesus is supplying the food, supplying their needs, meeting their needs, as well as helping and supplementing them. And all of this comes at that point. They're sharing this meal together, and they're kind of reverent and quiet because it says no one dared ask him who he was. And I like that because it showed an activity. See, the activity I wanted you to notice is that Jesus came, or Jesus went, or Jesus moved. Jesus is not stationary. He comes from where he was to meet you in the needs where you're at. In other words, one of the challenges for us as individuals, and certainly as a church or anywhere else around the world, is that step of moving to. One of the things that Carol and John are experiencing, now you could tell who wrote that letter. How? What did she mention? Seven people and one bathroom. That was a woman. It's okay. I understand that, but you understand it even better as a woman, okay? And so here she is, seven people, one bathroom, and she is experiencing something. She has stepped out. Her and John are out there. The key here is this moment of action. Wherever God calls you to step out, that has got to be taking place. I'm not throwing our stupid net on the right side of the boat. So I'm just leaving it. And the miracle would have been missed. Who's this guy on the shore that even hollers at us to throw it? Hey, you're probably using the wrong bait. Have you ever been a fisherman hearing somebody on the pier trying to tell you how to do it? And you always want to go, huh? Yeah, thanks. Yeah, they're biting on night crawlers or something. You know, they'll tell you, you know, they haven't been on night crawlers for years. And you just want to kind of push that guy out of your life. And instead, here's this guy hollering from the shore. No one knew who he was. No one knew who he was, but they were willing to step into it, threw the net on the other side of the boat, on the right side of the boat, and immediately the fish began to tug at the net. And John says, it's Jesus. Now, you have to recognize that in the consequence of life that God is calling us to, it's the place that you step out that you're going to have the most immediate response, the most immediate step of faith, the greatest action in return of anything you're investing on for the Lord. One of the challenges for us as Christians is to find a place to step out. It doesn't have to be on farm, what is it, farm rescue or farm aid, whatever it is. It can be in that spot that gets you talking to somebody. I read recently or one time where a missionary was visiting, I think I shared this with you, was visiting, and he was a little bit conflicted because the trip cost so much money, all right? And he goes to the Sudan in northern Africa, and he's just, it cost about $3,000 to make this two-week trip over to the Sudan. And somebody in his church had said, well, why don't you just give that money to somebody else? And he said, I felt really conflicted. I didn't know if that was a message from the Lord. I didn't know if I was just doing this for the wrong motives. I didn't know. And he said, as he went over there, he met one young man about 20 years old whose life had been filled with suffering and war and famine and starvation. And the young man responds to him and says, you know, I got to tell you something. And he said, we certainly do appreciate when people give us food and things. He said, but real friends send themselves. Real friends come themselves. And he said, I want to thank you for coming into my world of suffering and walking with me, even if it's only for a short time. He said, you have chosen to leave what you had and invest yourself in my circumstances. And I thought of how Jesus came from his location, from his circumstances, into my circumstances, and invested himself in me, and how that brings us all of the gift of the gospel, the truth and the message, and everything else that's going on. And so the miracle is understanding that Peter isn't just restored, he is given a directive. This is not only forgiveness, and I love this section because it reminds me every one of us has had our moments like Peter. I'm not going to, I don't want to, and some moment like that. All right? We've all lived in some level of denial, some set of circumstances. And the challenge, of course, in this beautiful text is, Peter, do you love me? And he asks him that three times, and you're supposed to be reminded of God restoring us, of God forgiving us, and that's beautiful. But today I want to focus on a different part of this text as he finishes this, okay? First of all, he asks Peter, he says, Peter, do you agape me? And agape is that spirit committed, unconditional commitment. And Peter responds, we're good friends. I love you. Phileo. Agape is that Greek word for the supreme, ultimate love of God for the world. Phileo is that love that has little strings and conditions attached to it. Still, Jesus responds, feed my lambs. Jesus asks again, Simon Peter, do you agape me? And Simon Peter responds, I phileo you, I love you. But he responds, we're deep, deep, close friends. And he says, feed my sheep. The third time he says to John, do you agape? No, this one he changes. Do you phileo me, Peter? And Peter goes, Lord, you know all things. You know that I phileo you. Now you go, what's going on? Peter's not there yet. Peter is being moved three times. The third time, it says, and Peter, deeply feeling this emotionally, how much does it take to move you? What gets you out of your chair into something that God wants you to be in? What moves you from where you're comfortable into a spot where you're uncomfortable? Seven people and... Well, I could never do that. When we went to Africa, you learned to share your bathroom with cockroaches and other little critters. And you were glad to get it. Because sometimes there weren't even toilets to sit on. Just holes in the ground. And I go, you want to talk about a life experience? You want to talk about stepping out? You want to talk about learning something really important? I just go, how hard it is for me. How hard it is for me to understand. Here's what's going on, though. Watch this. Jesus restores them and he gives them this commission. Feed them. Remember, kids? What did I have you do? Tear off a section. Feed somebody. That means I have to give up of some of my time. I have to give up of some of my comfort. I have to give up of some of my wealth. I have to give up of some of my life. I have to give up of some of my priorities because in order for me to feed them, something's going to change in my circumstance. Something is going to be altered. Something is going to take place within me in this action. And you hear Peter, and I know he still is not where God wants him yet, because he does a very interesting thing from the little section I didn't read to you. He comes at the end of this section, he says this. Jesus looked at Peter and says, there's a time coming when you're going to get old and you're going to have to stretch out your hands and they're going to dress you and they're going to take you places you don't want to go. And he said this, it says, to tell Peter by which death he would glorify God. And then he says, Peter, follow me. Follow me. Then Peter turns and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved. There's John over there. And he looks over at John and he says, this was the one who had leaned back on Jesus at the table and said, Lord, who is going to betray you? And Peter saw him, he asked, I'm sorry, verse 21. When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? You understand? It's never about him. Our intimacy with God, little kids had to take a piece of candy and tear off a chunk and hopefully give it to you. It's never about what the brother or the sister does. It's about what took place in that little child's heart to tear off a piece of, you know, fruit by the foot and actually let somebody else have it. It's that process of tearing it off that little child is taught the lesson. You can't tear it off for them. You can't make them give it away. It has to be an action that takes place within the heart of the child, the same way it has to be an action that takes place within your heart. It's that action that says, even if I go someplace with seven people in one bathroom, I am going. Do you understand? It's that move that God is calling us to. It is that step of follow me, which then steps us forward, which brings us to the finish of what the whole lesson for Peter is about. You understand? When we go through this little sequence and you start to think about turning disillusioned into passionate builders, you can help disillusioned. You can spot disillusioned people. They're all around. They can be fishermen skunked on a night of fishing. They can be individuals who have disappointed themselves by the way they've lived for Christ and denied Christ. They can come from any direction at any cause. And the key is, as we begin to understand the process, when you turn someone, the hands have got to begin to step out and build. A rock has got to be picked up, and it doesn't matter which section of the wall you're building. It doesn't matter what size rock you can actually hold. What matters is that Peter had to bend down and pick up his rock and put it in his portion of the wall to build the church to accomplish God's purposes. And so the challenge for you and I is not to compare myself to somebody else or be evaluated. You know, you're just not doing enough compared to what she does, and you two, you know, that is not God's call. God hasn't invited you to be the judge. God has not said, oh, gee, there just aren't enough judgmental people in the world. Why don't you evaluate how people are doing? Why don't you just look around the church and find out all the failures of the men and women? Let's point out all the inadequate husbands and wives. Let's show all the discipline of children that we would all do better when we were younger, all right, or older, whatever the case. All that stuff. And God says, I didn't call you to that. I called you to pick up a stone, put it in the right place. And I'm calling you, follow me. I'm building a wall. I'm putting this place back together. And God's challenge for us is to recognize, like Peter, you got to rebuke him again. Peter, knock it off. Why worry about what John is doing? There's a rock in front of you. Pick it up, put it in the wall. Feed my lambs, feed my sheep. I'll take you just like you are, Peter, but don't be distracted. Well, I don't want to start building on my... Look, I got a big rock. He's got littler ones. Does he get as much credit for his little rocks as I get for my one big one? Because my rock is about... You know, can you ever bend that way? And I'm going, we can't walk that path. And we can't walk around doing the comparison. The miracle is when you step out in your world. You understand? It's your world that you've got to step out on. For some of you, stepping out and talking to someone is nothing. For someone else, stepping out and talking to someone is like asking you to jump off the high dive. You understand? It isn't, God isn't up there measuring the criteria and saying, I'm sorry, you're just, you know, I'm not telling you all of us have to go and have 7 ratio to 1 bathroom ratios and then we've met the need. This is just setting the example to help you understand. It's in the standing up and the moving and the getting out that lives change, that things of God begin to happen. It's in that action of you grabbing your portion and entering into the building step that lives are touched. Now we got 2 families here at least. I don't know who all went. Tom and Claudia, I think, and Nadine and Mark. Who all went down, but they were down there helping the tornado victims. And I go, yeah, you know, it was fascinating. It didn't matter whether they were here or there. What mattered was they came back with an understanding of people's hearts different than if they have never had gone. They came back understanding the pain that these people go through. They came back looking at the garbage thrown in the bushes, just insulation from the house ripped apart, spewing all over and everything around their homes. They looked at basements that had to be emptied out. They looked at roofs that had fallen on cars and trash and garbage. They looked at all that stuff and they began to recognize how much the need really was. It was in the recognition, in the step of obedience, and I don't want to take their testimony away going to ask them, maybe they can come up sharing maybe during offering. And I go, that's the miracle. You understand? When Peter is told, follow me, that's exactly how he got him the first time. Do you remember that? Peter, follow me. I will make you fishers of men. Well, this is his restoration. Peter, follow me. And Peter is still growing. So here's the challenge. Here's the opportunity. Here's what I want you to understand. As we begin to recognize and begin to move in the direction of that God's calling us to and asking us to move, I want us to be able not only to recognize and understand there are plenty of disillusioned things, people, circumstances around us in our life. Helping someone turn is the start. Recognizing they've got to pick up the stone is when their lives begin to change. And so the challenge for you and I is, where is the stone in front of you? Who is he? Who is she? What area are you going to step out of your level of comfortability and move into a different area? Where are you going to find your seven people, the one bathroom? Where are you going to find that next step? Because you look back over your shoulder and you begin, like Peter, begin to say, I don't need this. I begin to walk away, until finally this man who denied Christ, who's recognized is that impetuous individual, tradition has it that on his death on the cross, he had asked the people, crucify me upside down. I don't even deserve to die the same way my faithful Savior died. Crucify me upside down. And the point ultimately is, Peter became the man that God had been calling him to be. Peter was forgiven. Peter was restored. But Peter still had to follow, pick up a stone. That's God's call in our hearts. Pray with me if you would. Lord, there are people to be visited. There are individuals and friends where we have to invest our time in. There are situations that we need to step into. There are stones, Lord, right in front of us, and we can't turn and wait for somebody else to pick it up. It's us stepping in, walking with someone, carrying someone through a difficult time, meeting a need, spending some time listening, that begin to change the heart of this nation, the heart of this work that you have for us here in terms of your church. And so, Lord, call us forward. Call us and invigorate us and challenge us to recognize, to look for that place where we can be coming uncomfortable and yet, Lord, fully comfortable with you. We have to learn that our comfort is not of this world, Lord. Our comfort is always and only in you. And so, Lord, just move us according to that. Help us to talk to someone new. Help us to forgive. Help us to reach out. Help us to make that phone call, that text, whatever that is in our lives, and make us into the people that start to walk a different path. Lord, set us free that we might really become builders ourselves, building your kingdom in the lives of other people, building, Lord, your truth in our own life experience. And then, Lord, just live in us that we would begin to testify of your glory, your mercy, your love, and your forgiveness. I pray this all in your name, Jesus. God's people said, amen.